my darling, it's time to put a stop to all the madness. You deserve so much more in your life. It's your time to glow up. Welcome to the Time to Glow Up podcast with Rebecca Hennings and guests. Your journey to transforming from the inside out begins here.
Hey, listeners. Yes, it's me, Rebecca Hennings, back with the second series of the Time to Glow Up podcast. I can't believe I'm on the second series already because, I mean, last year I just kept talking about it and then I finally did it and now I'm onto the second series already. And I've got so many listeners from around the world. So if you're wherever you're listening from, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. Now, the Time to Glow Up podcast, if you've never listened before, it's all about inspiring you to live your glowed up version of your life. Now, what is a glow up? By my definition, the glow up is a transformation from inside out. So I know a lot of people refer to the glow up as just merely looking physically better. And whilst that's an aspect or can be an aspect of glowing up, it's so much more. It's so much more than that. So this is about helping and inspiring listeners to achieve their own glow ups in their own life. And, you know, I encourage you to go back and listen to the first series. I've spoken to some wonderful, amazing people who have just gone through just some really deep situations and come through it the other side, and they are all the way glowing up. And that's what this is about. This started with me having gone through my own breast cancer experience in 2017. You know, I had my whole being sad moments for a long time, took a few years, but then I came through it and I was thriving. And I just wanted to share that. And I still want to share that with people. I want to share the notion, the fact that you can actually go through something traumatic, that's incredibly painful, and come out shining, glowing, feeling, living life wholeheartedly, because there's far too many people, I believe, that go through adversity, that, you know, they come through it, woohoo, great, but then stay in a place of pain. And I just want to share with people that it doesn't have to be that way. So that's what this is all about. So today, before I go into what today's about, I just want to say that there's a new format to how this will work now. So whereas before, every single episode was me interviewing, or bar the first one, was me interviewing other people about their glow up journeys. Yes, I will still do that, but I also want to share my learning with you, because this is a continuous learning journey for me. And I'm learning so much about, life, about trauma, which is what I'm going to talk about today, about healing, about living life wholeheartedly. And I want to share that with you, and various techniques for overcoming, or for living life living your best life. Right. So I want to share all that learning with you, because, I've been getting lots of messages lately, just like subconscious, messages which are telling me that I need to continue to share what it is I learn and not keep it to myself. And so I want to do a lot more of that, because I know a lot of stuff. I'm learning all this stuff, and, you know, where's it going? So yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Also, I'm going to make the podcast now come out once every 2 weeks, whereas before it was every week. I realize it's a lot. When I got busy weeks, and the whole editing process and uploading and putting it on the website takes time. And so I just want to be kind to myself and do this to the best of my ability, and not get to the point where I feel like I can't do this anymore. Because I'm not getting paid for this. I'm doing this for the love of it. And I just want to make sure I can do it to the best of my ability. So I'm going to be kind to myself. It's going to come out once every 2 weeks, but it also gives you longer to listen to episodes in between, because when they were just being fired out, I know that not everyone was getting a chance to listen to it every Sunday morning, which is when they come out. So that's that. So what is today all about? Well, I went on a course. It was called Trauma, the Brain and Recovery. It's run by mind body breakthrough, and there's a wonderful man called Wale Oladipo. Wale is an incredible guy, and yeah, he came to Birmingham with this course. It was sold out. I'd seen it advertised on Facebook, and I saw that he dealt with trauma, its effect on the brain, how you might overcome it. And I just thought, you know what, I need to know more about this, because I've gone through my own traumatic experience, and I know bits and bobs, but I wanted to be able to put it all together to make it make sense. And boy, did he make it make sense. So I just want to share some nuggets. I'm not planning for this to be an overly long podcast today. It's just about me sharing some of the highlights from that course. And I definitely will recommend you attending that course if you're interested in trauma and how it affects the brain. So I'm going to just kick off with, and I'll use some of examples from my own life to kind of put it into context and make it make sense. So so we're sat in the Hilton Garden Inn Hotel in Birmingham. Packed room. There must have been about, 60 people in there. I'm sure it was sold out. And yeah, he told us, initially he started about telling us about the brain and the different parts of the brain and all that sort of stuff. And I knew some of this stuff, but I really got to understand how it functions with regards to trauma. And so I try not to go into too much detail, because he had visual tools to help explain what he was talking about, and I haven't got that, and I'm not trying to recreate the course. I'm just giving you tidbits. So he spoke about four different parts of the brain, and one was the prefrontal cortex. That's the front of the brain, and that's the thinking part of the brain. Okay. He also spoke about the amygdala, and that's a part of the brain which deals with fight or flight. And I'm probably going to really simplify some of this, and I apologize, Wale, if I get any of this incorrect, but this is how I understand it. So the amygdala deals with fight or flight. The hippocampus part of the brain, that deals with memory. And then you've got the brain stem, which is at the base of the neck going up into the brain, that deals with survival. Now, why is all of this relevant? Well, I realize, because I went to go and see a psychotherapist after, not long after I had my operation. I had a mastectomy after my breast cancer experience. And I remember just telling her that I was really anxious, and I didn't understand it. And then she explained to me that, well, what happens when when your body goes through any sort of major shock is that instantly your survival instincts come into play. And so you don't immediately start to process what has happened to you. So now me being in Wale's session, that made sense to me, because I thought, so the brainstem, which is responsible for survival, that kicked in. So the brainstem was like, okay, we got a situation here, Rebecca. You've got a cancer, no problem. We're gonna deal with this. And so how Wale described the brainstem, it's like it's the receptionist of the brain. And the prefrontal cortex, which deals with the thinking, is like the CEO, right? So the brainstem, the hippocampus, and the amygdala all kind of work together. And they're like, you know what, guys, look, she don't need to be really dealing with having to process this all right about now. So let's not tell her. We'll deal with this. And so the thinking part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, obviously consciously, you know, you're going through cancer, but you're not really dealing with it. You're not dealing with that trauma, because the brain stem is kicking in. It's like, yeah, I got this. I'm the security guard. I'm going to, one of them's, they acting like they're the security, right? So we're going to sort this out, right? So that's what happens. And then your amygdala kicks in, fight or flight. And so for me, it was definitely about the whole fight. Yep, I'm going to find out as much as I can about breast cancer. I'm going to find out as much as I can about the treatments. And I'm going to do what I need to do in order to beat this thing. So that was my thing, right? And so that's what the brain does. It kind of kicks in this whole idea of, right, we need to preserve you. And that's what this whole thing is about. I love the body. I love how the body works, because it's naturally designed to keep you alive. There's homeostasis. Homeostasis is the whole idea of balance. And so the body is constantly trying to work to make sure that you are balanced, you are okay. So this is why the brainstem, the hippocampus, the amygdala kicked in. It's like, nah, man, we need you to be all right. So let's do what we need to do, because we don't know right about now if you can handle this. So let's let us deal with it. So anyway, that's that. So when you go through any sort of trauma, and actually I should probably give you the definition of trauma that he gave us. Right, so he said that trauma is the response to a deeply distressing or disturbing event that overwhelms the body's natural coping mechanism, causing feelings of helplessness, diminished sense of self, and an inability to feel a full range of emotions. Okay, so I'll just say that one more time. Trauma is a response to a deeply distressing or disturbing event. So for me, that was cancer, that overwhelms the body's natural coping mechanisms. Okay, causing feelings of helplessness, diminished sense of self, and the ability to feel a full range of emotions. So I go back to the fact that I said I was feeling anxious to the psychotherapist, and that was me just not being in touch with my emotions. So what she'd said, she said what I needed to do is, whenever I felt anxious, I just needed to sit and acknowledge the fact that I was feeling anxious and see what comes up, see what feelings come up. I didn't have to label the feelings, I didn't have to deal with the feelings, I just needed to notice them. And for me, that was one of the first biggest steps in my healing, was just noticing my feelings. Because through doing that, I was allowing them to come through. Because sometimes when I did that, I'd find that I was a little bit sad. Sometimes I'd find that I was angry at what happened to me. Sometimes I couldn't identify the feeling, but I just knew there was a feeling there. But I was allowing that feeling to come through. Yeah, and that's important. Because, and again, what I shared was that when we experience trauma, if we don't deal with it, it doesn't go away. And this is something that we've spoken about quite a few times in previous interviews, is the idea that you can't not deal with the trauma. You have to deal with it. It doesn't go anywhere. It's energy, and that you can push the energy away, but you've got to deal with it at some point, or it will keep resurfacing. So just kind of moving on with what he was saying about the different ways we react to trauma. So there's hyper arousal. That's where I'm just gonna find the notes here. Yeah, where you usually get physical and psychological symptoms. So there's hypervigilance. So for instance, with young people, I hear this phrase a lot, hypervigilance, in young people who are involved in violent crime, that if they've experienced some sort of trauma in their life. Sometimes it's because it was the trauma of not having a father or whatever it was. But this whole idea that you're constantly on alert, people with PTSD, they have this hypervigilance quality to them. There's things such as having abrupt mood swings, having nightmares, night terrors, having addictive behaviors or avoidance behaviors. I won't go through the whole list. So that's hyper arousal systems. I know that I suffered from having hypo arousal systems. Okay, and those are disassociation symptoms. So I had problems in handling my intense emotions. I'd distract like nobody's business. Facebook and Instagram and any form. Yeah, my phone was my major distraction technique. I just would use that so I wouldn't have to deal with what I was feeling. Depersonalization. So I was detached from my life. I was detached from some of my thoughts and definitely my feelings. And sometimes I just feel just overwhelmingly helpless. I just felt like, for the first time in my life, I felt like I couldn't plan for the future. I didn't know what I wanted to do. Like me, Rebecca Hemmings, like I've always known what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, in the first 2 years after having cancer, I just didn't have a clue about where I wanted to go. So that was, for me, experiencing the whole hypoarousal symptoms that can come about as a result of having trauma. So I'm just gonna talk now about some of the tools that were shared about overcoming trauma, because you know, you hear about this stuff and I got really excited, but I was like, no, but what do you do to get over it? Even though I've got through, I definitely got through my trauma, because actually what he said was, you know you're through your trauma when you can talk about it and it doesn't take you back to that place on an emotional level. So if I was talking about my cancer experience, my mastectomy, my, you know, the whole idea of me finding out about having cancer, and I became emotional, I relived it, and then that would show that I wasn't through it. But I, as many of you will know, I talk about it freely, and it was actually me talking about it that was one of the ways in which I got through it. And again, that's something that he shared, was talking therapies are great. And, you know, you can go to a professional therapist, you can talk amongst your friends and your family. And for me, I used creativity, I guess, you know, me blogging, to express what I was going through. I felt I just had to, it was very cathartic. I had to talk about my experience, and you know, I acknowledged at the time, and I still do, that it's not something that everybody's going to want to do, but it does help you to process what has happened. And so that energy I was talking about that is in your body as a result of that trauma, that slowly begins to release. So if you imagine like a Coke bottle that's been shaken up and it's pressurized, and so all that, the pressurized air that's in there, and the bubbles, they're so wanting to come out. But unless you turn the top of that bottle, it's never going to come out. And so if you just imagine me writing, for instance, sharing my story, when I was imagine that's like turning the lid of the bottle, you call it the lid, the top of the bottle, very, very slowly, and you can just hear some of that the built-up gases being released. That's what that is like. So other tools he mentioned with regards to overcoming trauma were meditation. And I was like, oh my gosh, of course. I mean, I knew this because I had been recommended meditation. I remember I was kind of like, no, I wouldn't quite go as far as to say anti-meditation, but I just thought like meditation is for those people over there. It's like new age, like it's not for me. But when I got to a really critical point where I felt as though I can't do this anymore, I'm really sad, I'm unhappy, I don't know how to move forward with my life, someone who'd been through breast cancer had recommended a particular course. It was called Mindfulness, A Practical Guide to Finding Peace in a Frantic World. By Mark Williams and Danny Penman. I've mentioned this before because it was just life-changing for me. And so she actually went on the physical course, so she met with people and you know, an instructor who led this. But I bought the book, which came with the CD, but also you were able to download the app. And I did this because I knew it was backed by academic research. You know, you can't argue with the facts. So I thought, okay, all right then, this is not just some stuff that people have made up, and you know, it's not just a belief, it's actually backed by research. So I did it, and I tell you, it's an 8-week course. By the seventh week, I committed to it. You had to do it like 6 days a week, and it was like meditating for anywhere between 10 to 30 minutes in the morning and the evening. Sometimes I cheated, I'll be honest, but I did it for the most part. I'd say 80% of it I did it, and by the end of it I just felt incredible. I was happy again, I was optimistic, I could see the way forward, and I swear by it. So when he mentioned it today, today I went on the course. I just got excited because I knew about the power of meditation, and he went through a few few meditations that he'd done, and even just doing that for a few minutes just cleared my mind. And I just wanted to read something from the book, actually, Mindfulness: A Practical Guide to Finding Peace in a Frantic World. It says here, mindfulness also encourages you to break some of the unconscious habits of thinking and behaving that stop you from living life to the full. Many judgmental and self-critical thoughts arrive out of habitual ways of thinking and acting. By breaking with some of your daily routines, you'll progressively dissolve some of those negative thinking patterns and become more mindful and aware. You may be astonished by how much more happiness and joy are attainable with even tiny changes in the way you live your life. Oh my gosh. And so they also talk about in this book, breaking habits. So they make suggestions that each week you do something different. So this week, instead of sitting on the same chairs in your place of workplace or around your dining table or wherever it is, sit in a different chair. And it kind of just makes you, again, just makes you more mindful, makes you more conscious. It makes you more in the moment you're living your life. I'll tell you something that made me very mindful the other day, actually. My daughter was ill, and there's nothing that makes you more present than your child being ill, because you can't switch off. You can't just, you know, go through the motions. Especially because she was vomiting and she just wasn't well. And I just wanted to obviously be there for her as her mother. And it just made me think afterwards, like, whoa, I was so in the present then, because you have no choice but to be. And so the desire, certainly in my life, because I still disassociate sometimes, you know, sometimes when either you're bored or you're going through the motions for whatever reason, you know, you find yourself just going through life, not necessarily thinking about it, not always being mindful. My aim is to be mindful the majority of the time. I don't know if it's possible to be mindful 100% of the time, and would you even want to be? Because there's nothing wrong with daydreaming, there's nothing wrong with just chilling out for a bit. But I suppose the problems come into play when you do that for the majority of the time and you're just not living your life. So anyway, that was one of the tools. So there was talking, there was meditation. What else did he say? Just want to share a few more with you. Of course, exercise. Hello. Because we know that exercise can help to release endorphins, which improves your mood. And so you naturally feel happier. We also know that obviously when you exercise, it improves the cardiorespiratory system. So that's your heart and your lungs. So you're naturally, you're preventing disease for one, cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and so on. If you exercise on a regular basis, and a regular basis is classed as working out for 150 minutes per week. So break that down into the 5 30-minute sessions of moderate exercise. We know that exercise can help to improve the mood. Also, it helps to reduce inflammation and helps to reduce stress also. And stress causes inflammation then lowers your immune system and then can opens up the body to a world of diseases. So exercise is definitely a great thing. Community, being around great people, supportive people. He mentioned the word family, and he says, well, family doesn't necessarily have to mean your blood relatives, but people who are around you that got your back. And good quality people. And what really fascinated me, actually, he mentioned this thing called the Rosetto effect. Now, the Rosettos was a community, an Italian community somewhere in the States, around in the 60s. And they had really low rates of heart disease. And so all these researchers were like really, really interested, because like compared to the rest of the population in the US, they were just phenomenal. Like, how come? They kept asking the question, well, why is it these people have such great results when it comes to their heart health. And they thought, well, maybe it's because, you know, they're Catholic and they pray, you know, because religion can be really good for stress levels. Or maybe it's because they're like really healthy, they don't smoke or whatever. But what they found was there was none of the above. These people did smoke. They, you know, were not necessarily moralistic. You know, they lived quite wild lives. But what they had over most people in the US at that time was a very extremely close-knit family, and it was that sense of community that had lowered their susceptibility to heart disease, which is quite a phenomenal effect. So we shouldn't underestimate the power of having a strong community and network around us, and this is why loneliness is never a good thing, and it's something a lot of people suffer from nowadays, particularly with the growing nature of this digital world where we can just contact people through various apps and whatnot. We're losing that sense of connectivity. So it's actually having the opposite effect and increasing people's chances of getting things like heart disease. Okay, and also he mentioned food, and I'm not going to go into that because we know food's a whole massive area in itself, but obviously eating healthily, eating well for the mind, having the right supplements and so on. He mentioned things like having massages, sleeping for, you know, a decent amount of time. There's lots of research on that, and I definitely always try and get between the recommended 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night, because I know it has a if you lack sleep, that can have a detrimental effect on your health, and particularly your inflammatory responses. And so that's it. That's all I'm going to share right about now, because this is not about me giving away the whole of his course. You know, I highly recommend it. If you're interested in this area, go and book into one of his courses. He does plenty of them. And what I loved is that he came with a bag, or must be a suitcase load of books that he's written. This man knows his stuff. And you know what I really loved about him is that he broke things down to layman's terms, because sometimes you just need it broken down. So I've come away knowing all these different terms, understanding the functions. He gave us plenty of opportunity to ask questions, to speak to one another, so we could really process the information. Just absolutely brilliant. So I'll definitely be going on another one of Mind Body Breakthroughs courses. He came with a bag full of books is what I was going to say. So he's got a number of resources on his website. So the website is www.mindbodybreakthrough.net. I'll make sure I include that in the description box for this podcast. But that's what I wanted to share with you today, just a few golden nuggets about trauma and overcoming that, because I think far too many of us have undealt with trauma or have trauma and don't know what to do with it. And I know that I've been able to deal with it, but I didn't quite understand what it was I was doing until today. I mean, I understood bits of it, I just didn't understand it as a full picture. So I get it now, and I'm just excited, wanted to share it. So that's it. I will be interviewing Wale. He has agreed to be interviewed, so that should be a good one to look out for, as should be an interview with my Auntie Diana. First time interviewing a relative, but I interview her because she has two twins by donor and egg insemination at the age of 50. She's incredible. She was in the newspapers and everything, and so she's living her glowed up life. And also Sophie Grace Holmes, a phenomenal woman who's overcome death. I'm just going to say it like that, because the doctors told her, because of her condition, she has cystic fibrosis, that she would be dead, I believe, by the age of 16. And I spoke to her not too long ago. She's now age 29. She's a fitness fanatic, and I say that in the most respectful terms. She has totally taken control of her health and her life. And so, I look forward to you guys hearing that. So that's it. You got an amazing series 2 coming up. And I just want you to take from it what you need. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the other side.